He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Caught by Boston College. I don't believe it. It's a touchdown. The Eagles win it.
And the kick is blocked. Appalachian State has stunned the college football world. James, the lateral.
Chris Davis takes it at the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my gosh.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Welcome to the fan appreciation episode of the Walk On Red Shirts podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, and with me, my co-host, Jake, and intern, Gibble. On this week's episode, we're pretty much hammering out. This is the last one before we start previewing the upcoming college football season, which will be in 2 weeks, starting with the ACC. And we just decided to take your questions this week, as well as go through some news. Nothing more, nothing less. So thanks for all of you who shot out some little questions and stuff like that and topics you wanted us to discuss. We'll get to that towards the end of the show. How are you guys doing?
I go back to work today, so, you know, kind of sucks.
Yeah, I've been back to work.
So, nobody cares what you do, Gibble.
I know.
People are more curious about, you know, me going back to work, and they want to see you do burpees.
Well, they care about me a little bit, and that's what really counts here.
That means they want to see you suffer.
Well, yeah, but they still
care about you when it comes to voting on best teams, which is true. Such a farce.
It's really, really weird. So in other news, I discovered something incredible this weekend, and I felt the need to share it on the podcast. Do you know PBR makes a whiskey?
Didn't know that.
Probably the worst whiskey I'll ever taste.
So I'm going to be now on the mission to try to find this PBR whiskey, because, I mean, it's a white whiskey, so I'm not really fond of that, but I feel like I need to own it.
I feel like it's either going to be great or it's going to be ass.
Oh, no, it's going to be terrible. It's going to be absolutely terrible, because a white whiskey is never good. But I feel like I just have to own it for my collection.
That's fair. You being one of the only PBR promoters out there.
One day they're going to sponsor this podcast and you guys are going to laugh.
I'll laugh.
Welcome Red Shirt, sponsored by Pabst Blue Ribbon.
I mean, I'm not saying no to sponsorships, but, like, I'm not going to praise them on the podcast.
That's why they have me.
I'll leave that to you guys. I mean, if we're getting whiskey sponsorships, I need Screwball to get on here so I can start getting free bottles. Because I'm stopping at the liquor store every 2 weeks to pick up a $30 bottle of that stuff.
I like Screwball, but I can't drink it consistently because the peanut butter flavor is good, but it's just not a flavor I can drink consistently.
Oh, buddy. Oh, yeah, I do. I don't drink all the time, but when I do, I'm down in half a bottle of that stuff at a time.
Oh, it goes down real smooth.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, that's what I have on deck if we ever get around to the Fiesta Bowl watch along.
One of these days.
One of these days. But yeah, I mean, hey, I'm all about getting some whiskey sponsorships on this show. I'd love to get a couple free bottles of any brand, really. I mean, I'm not picky.
You know, if Kibbles and Bits wants to sponsor us, we'll make sure intern eats, you know, more dog food, which he says happened already one time.
I don't think that they would condone the human consumption of their food.
How do you know?
For pets.
I mean, yeah. They don't have to condone it. I mean, they could put up a disclaimer.
Not true. For human consumption, except for intern Gibble.
Yeah. Not for human consumption, but if you're an idiot, you're an idiot.
Nothing did you actually eat that. Dog food once?
Yeah, I'm not going to confirm or deny that. I'll leave that up to your imagination there.
No, it's just me and Folsom here. So did you do it or did you not?
If it happened, it was in middle school. It was in Ohio. And we didn't have a camcorder, so, you know, can't really.
You were
going to
say
it.
You guys didn't have regular food.
Yeah, we were out of regular food, so we ate dog food.
No. That would have been a real low.
We ran out all the bread and cheese for grilled cheese, and we had to eat Fido's old kibbles and bits.
Would you eat wet dog food if we got it?
No.
Oh, God. That I don't even want to watch that.
My dog loves that stuff. He loves the wet food more than the dry stuff. When he's like struggling to eat, we get that out, and then he, you know, wolfs it all down real quick.
Well, I'd imagine for a dog that would probably be more enjoyable than a dry dog food. I mean, dry dog food has the consistency of Triscuits, but which I love Triscuits. Triscuits sponsor the pod. But
I guess you get more saltine, like
But yeah, Gibble, what about if we get kibbles and bits and you just treat it as cereal and
we'll put some milk
in some milk.
Yeah. Oh,
gosh, that doesn't sound ideal.
Okay. Well, suit yourself.
You're lost.
Probably
enough talk about dog food on this episode.
Yeah, probably. Gibble, you want to take us to some news here?
Sure, we can actually get back to football related content.
Unfortunately, yeah,
probably for the best.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll start this off in the ACC. Commissioner John Swofford is retiring as the commissioner after the 2021 season. He spent his entire career in the ACC. Some might say he saved it. He's kind of work to stabilize it and ensure its future strength, according to the ESPN article. He served for 24 years leading the ACC and is retiring after this coming season. So I think he's done a lot of good for the whole conference. Over in the Pac-12, Under Armour is looking to end their 15-year, $280 million deal with UCLA. Under Armour has recently made the difficult decision to discontinue our partnership with UCLA, as we've been paying for marketing benefits that we have not received for an extended period of time, according to the company's statement from this past Saturday. So that's really not good for UCLA.
That's very bad, because this was the largest contract for apparel or licensing when it was created. I'm guessing it still is. $280 million is a ton of money.
Yeah.
And this isn't good, because I've also heard that Under Armour has been taking a little bit of a hit during this whole situation during COVID and in the last couple of years, because originally, obviously, when Under Armour came out, they were all about the thermal gear, and then Nike and other competitors caught up as well. And Under Armour has been struggling to break into the apparel. They originally had a deal with MLB for their uniforms, and they backed out of that one. And if you look across the country of who uses Under Armour, Nike owns 80% of them. Under Armour owns probably another 10 to 15. And then the other 5 to 10 is anywhere from Adidas or Russell Athletic. Shout out Russell Athletic for, I think they had their one team. I think it was Maryland for a while.
Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech is who it is.
They had them up until like a couple years ago, I think.
Yeah. So there's a couple of different ones. I think Aeropostale had somebody's for, I think they had UConn for a hot minute too, which is actually comical. But this is, I think this is more Under Armour is trying to save some money rather than they're not getting their benefits. Also, UCLA is not that big of a brand in the across the country, so I don't know why you'd pay that much for them. Like,
right? That doesn't
UCLA really might be a big a brand in California, but when I went out to California, I walked through the airport and I only saw USC stuff. I didn't see a single UCLA thing in the airport.
I was about to say, if you're looking at branding and you're investing a ton in a school, USC is going to be the one, at least in California. I mean, you're never going to get Oregon, so that's just out the window. If you wanted Washington, maybe, like, if we're talking specifically on the West Coast, but UCLA is not like a national brand, at least for football. I mean, I guess you could say basketball because of their
basketball. They've been relevant in nearly 15 years.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say. Their history keeps them relevant there, but recently, no. Football, also recently, no. So,
yeah. this just felt like it was a bad deal on Under Armour's point, and now they're looking for a way to break it.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that as well. It's a brand that just hasn't been there for a long time, and it's a shame. But we'll see what ends up happening. But yeah, that's a pretty big hit for UCLA should that go through.
The misconception is UCLA is like a storied program, and UCLA actually is like not that good of a football program historically. They've been to the Rose Bowl like less than 10 times. Like, they really haven't won the Pac-12. They go through spurts where they once or twice a decade, they put together a good team that finishes in the top 15, top 20. But other than that, like, they're very just like 7-5, 8-4, 5-7. Like, they're just middle of the road.
Oh yeah, for certain. I mean, it's the wooden, you know, 10 championships and stuff like that, that kind of carries that program long-term in the eyes of everyday college football fans and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, historically speaking, on the football side of things, they haven't traditionally been, yeah, power. So
yeah. All right, well, switching gears a little bit, we are going to get back into a little bit of the racial
injustice
thing. Yeah, injustice, thank you, blanked on that word, in kind of going throughout the nation right now. The NCAA has expanded its Confederate flag policy on Friday. So they're going to prohibit their championship events from being held in states where the flag is flown. I think specifically Mississippi and Georgia would be the two that come to mind first. Along that, Mississippi State running back Kalen Hill said on social media, he said on social media Monday, he's not going to play for the Bulldogs this upcoming season unless the state flag is changed. The House and State Senate in the state of Mississippi just voted to remove the Confederate flag from the state flag. So that's definitely a step in the right direction for that state for sure. And obviously Kylan Hill is a big member of that team. So it would be good to have him. But I mean, it's just good for every player on like in the state. It's good for the nation really to get rid of that symbol. It just is a symbol of oppression and doesn't really deserve a spot in the I guess national scope of things.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that, I mean, a lot of Mississippians have been looking for a long time now, and it's never really garnered this much attention. But yeah, I mean, a guy of Kylan Hill's stature, who's one of the better running backs in college football, speaking out about it is a pretty big thing that kind of helped drive this home. And it's another example of these college athletes showing that, you know, they have a voice in all this and they can kind of push the issue forward a bit better than a lot of other people. And especially in a state like Mississippi that doesn't have a pro sports team. So, you know, Mississippi State and Ole Miss is what you have there. So good for Kylan Hill to bring this forward. Good for Lane Kiffin, Mike Leach, and all the football coaches who went to the Capitol building and stuff like that and had these discussions and all that to move forward and do the right thing here.
Yeah, I said this on Twitter, and I still very believe this, that college athletes are starting to realize that their voice means a lot more than what people used to believe it did. That their voice and what they say in some areas is more influential than some professional athletes, because in states like, you know, Mississippi and Alabama, they don't have professional athletes. And you'll see the people on Twitter saying, you know, if you don't want to be here, remove your scholarship, kick them off the team. And you can say that, but if you remove 40 players off your team, you're not going to have a team. And there goes your precious Mississippi State Bulldogs, your Alabama Crimson Tide, and now you don't have a football team that you love and cherish so much, that their voice means a lot more than what people think.
Yeah, you're seeing that in Oklahoma State as well, with Chuba Hubbard coming out and saying everything that he did, his teammates rallying around him. Now you're seeing change on that campus. So it's a great thing to see all students in like just across the country starting to realize how important their voice is. And I think just in general, athletes are using their voices more. Professional athletes are using their voices even more than before to just kind of speak out about everything and promote a lot of positive change for the entire country on things that everybody was just kind of sitting by and watching happen, but not ever doing anything about. So the whole shut up and dribble thing is just out the window right now. And that's a really good thing to see.
Yeah. I wish I had saved it, but there was a really good tweet from Roger Sherman on like a week and a half ago or something like that. That was basically what Jake said. Like it was somebody suggesting, oh, like get rid of their scholarship, kick them out if they don't want to be here. And he was like, okay, so you're going to go 0-12 this year. You're killing your entire recruiting base because you're not standing on the right side of history here. In a sport that's, you know, predominantly black players. You're essentially going to kill your own program if you don't side with the players at this point. I mean, we've come a long way from the 60s and the civil rights movement and stuff like that to a point now where the majority is on that side. So it's, you either make the change or, you know, you're going to be left in the dust and you're not really going to have a competitive football program, especially a team like Mississippi State in the SEC. You're essentially giving yourself a death blow if you don't help side with these players in this current environment. So, yeah, I mean, it's easy to say, well, cut their scholarship, but if you cut one guy's scholarship, half the team's going to end up deciding to leave. Then your recruiting base is dead. Then, you know, you don't have a football team in the future. I mean, it's that easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say a very simple thing back on, you know, for instance, this doesn't go in all of the racial injustice, whatnot, but recruiting is based off of making a kid feel wanted. Just plain and simple that you want him. If you're doing things that push away your players, it's going to be very hard to get anybody, even if you're not kicking players off a team.
Yeah. And I think you're seeing this, like you mentioned, just the football aspect and the sports aspect. This can, like, monetarily, this can also hurt a school. So like right now, every university is dealing with COVID. Plus this on top of it, if you are having anything, like if you're losing half your football team, which in some schools is the biggest like money cash cow for the school. So you're losing money for your university. You're going to have kids that are growing up realizing what's right and wrong on the issues of race, not going to those schools. You're just going to end up losing tons of money, and it's going to impact the entire university and not just the sporting teams. So
yeah, the trickle down effect is insane for this.
Yeah. So these schools need to be even more careful to make sure that they are doing the right things and taking the right steps. Speaking of that, Kansas State, there's a group of student athletes of color saying that their members are not going to participate in all athletic related events unless the university takes action in the wake of a tweet by a student mocking the death of George Floyd. We're not going to give that kid the satisfaction of bringing up his actual tweet. If you don't know it, go look it up. Pretty offensive tweet. You can definitely understand why everybody on that campus is just incredibly upset with what's happening. The students there are looking to kind of make the school's policy one where they can expel any student that openly displays racism on all platforms, such as social media, school, Aggieville, and sporting events.
So this is a little bit of a different situation here. I read into this one a little bit and I read some law stuff, but it's going to be very hard for them to create a policy where if you tweet something that could be viewed as racist, to kick a student out, because there's a bunch of Supreme Court decisions that back free speech as long as they're not inciting violence. So, you know, you can make the case, But essentially what I read is from a couple different lawyers is that this kid's looking for his airtime and just so he can get kicked out so he can sue the university.
Oh, well, that's
good. Basically what they read. That's basically what they deciphered into it, that he is going to just continue to tweet some of the, or utilize his platforms to do this. And yeah, it's going to be very tough to create a policy because it can, in theory, limit free speech.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's kind of right along the lines of, yeah.
But, you know, it's messed up, but it's hard to create a policy that would, you know, reflect that.
Right. I mean, like, obviously, racial discrimination is wrong in every aspect of life. But at the same time, you are infringing on free speech by somebody saying something like he did. So it's not a great situation either way. All right. So our last little bit here on the issues of race, Oregon and Oregon State are no longer going to be using the term civil war to promote their rivalry games between the two schools. According to the state president, Ed Ray, that's Oregon State's president, Ed Ray, changing the name is overdue and it represents a connection to a war fought to perpetuate slavery. So it's a small step. I mean, civil war is just a very well-known term. It's used in kind of a lot of situations, but it's good to see them taking that step to get it out of the university.
I think you're supposed to poll to see what they rename their rivalry.
Yeah. Isn't there something about a platypus?
Yes.
I'm on board for that.
Yeah. They play for a platypus trophy. It's just the Battle of the Platypus or something like that. Yeah. I mean, it was always a kind of a cool name just because it's what it is. But at the same time, I was like, what is the Civil War in reality have anything to do with Oregon? So really, why are they using it?
They weren't even
anyway?
A state yet.
No, they were.
They were? No, Oregon definitely wasn't a state at that point.
I think they were. I double checked it. I think 1859. I did the double check it because I was about to say the same thing. And I was like,
February 14th, 1859. Incredible.
Yeah, I mean, they were way out in the West. They didn't have a ton. So it's like, why did they ever have that as a name anyway? As long as we have the Holy War still, that's all that matters. As long as we can keep that with Utah and BYU, I don't really care. But fuck the civil conflict.
That is the greatest rivalry in all of sports.
It's not. One team may never win the trophy.
One team may drop to FCS before they get a chance to win.
What if UConn drops to FCS and then they just play other drop to FCS Idaho every game, 12 game season?
And soon they'll drop to FCS UMass.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's fine. Name it after the Platypus Trophy. That's fun.
Perfect. I'm here for it. Is there a petition? I'll sign it.
No, there is a petition to rename Columbus Flavortown, though. It has over 100,000 signatures.
Please
sign
it. Everyone go sign this.
I just saw something on the internet with somebody having a mug saying Flavortown, Ohio, and they gave me the link to Etsy, so I'm going to buy my mug.
I mean, I'll uproot my life and move to Flavortown. I don't give a shit. Like, rename that town.
Does Guy have a restaurant out there? Because if not, he needs 7.
He was born there.
Yeah,
but
he's from Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, but he needs a restaurant.
This mug is only $10, and I'm absolutely going to buy this Flavortown mug.
Yep.
Got to do it. Now is the perfect. Now you're going back to work. I mean, now you just got to start hashing out money.
Exactly.
But
Kid, we'll talk about the Rona.
Yeah, I was going to say, switching gears to the Rona, there have been a bunch of new cases kind of throughout the country. Clemson had 14 new positive tests, which brings their total up to 37. Texas Tech had 23, with two of the athletes not yet to recover. They're asymptomatic and just kind of socially distancing at home and everything. Texas had 13 new cases. Boise State closed their campus and athletic facilities for the week after they had 8 students test positive. Not necessarily student athletes, but just students in general. Everything should be reopening there today, Sunday.
They pushed it back a week.
Pushed it back. Well, that's not great. So next Sunday, they should be reopening. Kansas State suspended all of their football workouts for 14 days following 14 athletes across campus testing positive. Houston also suspended its workouts on June 12th after 6 symptomatic student athletes. This is switching gears a little bit. You're going to see that a lot over the country. I'm sure that there's more students on more campuses, but these are just kind of the ones that are out and released.
Here's my take on this. Cases are going to happen. I understand at the beginning trying to figure it out, but like in the middle of the season, cases are going to happen. So I think the NCAA is on a very poor part of planning and giving guidance and anything at all, honestly, on this whole situation, because they're just letting the schools and conferences handle it themselves and everybody's doing it different. That, you know, players are going to test positive in September, October. It's going to happen. It's just going to be about what plan is in place of managing it, because if your first instinct, if you get 4, 5, 6 cases, is to shut down the campus, then you might as well not even bring anybody back this fall. Don't bring any students back on campus, because you're going to be bringing back 10, 15, 30, 40,000 kids on the campus. And if 15 are going to get it and you're going to shut down, don't bring anybody back.
Right. Well, for starters, the NCAA with poor leadership say it ain't so.
Shocking, right? Who would have thought?
Yeah.
Wildest news I've heard all day.
That's kind of been my point the whole time is like, you know, if we're going to go ahead with this, like, keep regular students home, have them do online classes at least, you know, first period of school up until 2021 and reevaluate when it comes to December or whatever. But yeah, I mean, if you really want to have college football and you really don't want your star players to have to sit 2 weeks during the season, your best bet's going to be to eliminate how many people are on campus. I don't think kids being on campus is that big of a deal in terms of the student athletes and stuff like that. But yeah, limiting the amount and not having thousands of kids there on campus, because we all know college kids, you know, they're not.
Unless you had 30 kids get the corona from going to a nightclub together. Of course, they're going to all be stupid.
Yeah, I mean, and that's really what it comes down to. I mean, we still don't fully know the extent and whether you can get it multiple times. There's an issue going on and another side of things where there's a possibility of you being able to get it more than once. Which would make sense. I mean, it is a flu. But yeah, I mean, it's all about limiting exposure, and you're going to have to do that with, you know, having online classes for students and stuff like that at some point. So that's probably your best approach if you're any of these schools. And yeah, you're going to have kids get it, and it's about limiting that. It's about limiting their exposure then to coaches and stuff like that, because coaches are old, staffers old, you know, all that stuff. You kind of want to limit that too. So it's all about mitigating the risks, and some schools are doing a good job. It's nice to see schools self-reporting these to let folks know what's going on.
There have been some schools that have reported zero, which is also nice to see.
Yeah, I don't necessarily believe that, but yeah, we'll go with that.
But yeah, I don't think they're testing every single, like some of them haven't, they only bring so many people back. They only bring, you know, 65 or 70 people back. So I could believe that out of that many, zero would be test positive for actively having it. I could believe that one.
I think Kansas State was 14 athletes out of 130 or some that were tested. So they're definitely not testing everyone. They're just testing
some. The ones that are back. Some, not everybody's back yet. Like even football teams, they're not bringing their full 120 with every single walk on back yet.
Right. But the other thing is, I think it's we're kind of entering a really important time with the amount of cases that are spiking right now, having Florida and Texas just going absurd and having 10,000 cases in just Florida in a day. It's going to be really interesting to see if the amount of deaths also spike. If they don't, then I think that's a really good sign. And obviously I'm rooting for the amount of deaths to not spike. But it's a really good sign that, that we can get sort of back to normal if the cases are spiking and the deaths are staying lower, or they're not increasing proportionally. We don't want that, is what I'm trying to say here.
Can I say that it doesn't surprise me Florida is spiking, because Florida has Florida Man.
Yeah, no, that's not surprising at all.
Florida man carrying nearly 500 grams of weed tries to steal plane to meet girlfriend, police say.
Wasn't Florida like the last state to shut down and now the first state to reopen?
Yeah, they were closed for like a week and they weren't even fully closed.
Like, oh no, spring break happened. We got to shut down the state. Oh, wait. We
I'm half the beaches, but we're not actually just, we're just not going to have a lifeguard there. Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Clay Travis told me that Texas and Florida are leading the way on recovery. So, you know, got to take his word for it.
Clay Travis, word of God.
Fucking the most cases.
So I guess the most people are also recovering.
I've actually muted Clay Travis because I just can't stand his tweets. I don't like when people retweet it because it just angers me seeing his face.
Nobody moves the goalposts like that. He shouldn't. His whole thing shouldn't have been outkick the coverage. It should have just been, I move the fucking goalposts. Like every time something comes up that proves him wrong, he just pushes the goalpost back a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I keep him unmuted because it helps me to see people that dunk on him. But yeah, I mean, it's it can be infuriating.
Never forget, Clay Travis is the whole reason Greg Schiano was never the Tennessee head coach. Now, not saying that Greg Schiano should or shouldn't have been, but he was pretty much hired and Clay Travis unhired him.
Yeah, but that's actually the best thing he ever did, because now Rutgers is back. So
that is. Clay Travis saved Rutgers. You heard it here first.
And so apparently Tennessee is back as well. So
is Texas? Can't wait for them to get dunked on by Oklahoma this year.
Oh boy.
Anyways, Gib, we'll keep going.
All right. So on the university side of some of the coronavirus, Washington is reducing their overall athletic department operating budget by 15% for the upcoming fiscal year. And all of the school's head coaches have agreed to a minimum of 5% pay reduction. So you're going to see, I feel like you're going to see that a lot across the nation, different schools doing different things to kind of implement cost saving procedures.
Yeah, there's been a bunch already that have already started doing it.
Yeah. Tennessee, their athletic budget is assuming that they will have fans in the stands for the football games. But they are still including a $10.1 million cut in overall revenue. So that's great. We definitely want to see fans in the stands. That would be most fun, but as long as there's football, that's the most important part. And then the last thing we got here regarding coronavirus is the UCLA football players. They've come together to demand that their health and safety is protected as they approach a return to campus workouts and eventually practice. So basically they do not feel that the current staff is really has their health in the best interests. So they want a third party to kind of enforce the COVID regulations, and to identify the breaches in conduct, be there for team activities. And they just want to kind of mitigate detrimental consequences placed on students by the possible future mishandling and neglect of the COVID-19 cases. So more trouble in paradise for UCLA. Things are going great out on the West Coast. So that's all we got for the Rona. Now switching gears into some portal news. Former five-star linebacker recruit Marcel Brooks is transferring from LSU. He is currently in the portal, doesn't have a destination yet. But he played in 11 games as a reserve last season. He had 8 tackles and 1.5 sacks. He played mostly safety, but they were looking to switch him into the linebacker role more so this season. So he was also the one that yelled at the Alabama fans and
recruits,
recruits, and said, you should come here instead. Now he's leaving. So that's a little awkward.
Follow him. I heard there's rumor he'll go somewhere in Texas because there's some sort of family issue or family potential issue that he might go back to Texas, somewhere in the state of Texas. TCU is one that was rumored.
Gotcha. Another former five-star recruit, Penn State running back Ricky Slade is transferring to Old Dominion. He's going to be following his former offensive coordinator in Ricky Rainey, who is now the new head coach there.
Ronnie.
Gosh darn it. I'm great at pronunciation.
You just never get any of them right.
Some of them. Alabama has added former Mississippi State and TCU quarterback Logan Burnett to their quarterback room. He's going to be a grad transfer, but he's also barely played for either team. He's actually transferring for all academic reasons. Texas Tech landed grad transfer Chidarius Townsend from Alabama. He's going to be running back for them. He's going to have 2 years of eligibility remaining, and they also get former LSU safety Eric Monroe, another grad transfer who had 21 tackles last season. And lastly, we have two Liberty football players that announced on social media that they are going to be transferring. They cited racial insensitivity and cultural incompetence. They would be sophomore cornerbacks. Oh, goodness. Kytrell Clark and Travion Land.
Tavion. There's no R there.
Well, goodness.
You went like 50% on names through that.
Yeah, it's close. So, anyway, that's all we got.
Hey, Gibble.
Yeah, I mean, I would.
Go ahead, Aaron.
I wouldn't be surprised to see more of this stuff from Liberty, too. A lot of that campus and the football players primarily are not exactly fans of Jerry Falwell Jr., so that's unsurprising.
Liberty's a weird place.
Yeah, we'll see what ends up happening with them, but when you're the highest rated recruit in your team's history decides he wants out, it's not a great look.
No.
Hey, Gibble.
Yeah?
Have you gone shopping at all during this coronavirus at all?
Yeah.
Done any online shopping?
Yeah.
Bought any clothes?
I think so, yeah.
We'll go with no because you said you think. What if I told you you can get some quality t-shirts, long sleeves, polos, or hoodies delivered to your door?
That'd be cool.
I'm sure it would be. I'm sure it would be. Well, if you join the Athletes Tea Club, you can get some quality stuff. You get to pick your sport. You can do basketball, baseball, field hockey, football, soccer. We all know that you love soccer.
Big fan.
Or any other sports. Monthly subscription. They surprise you every month. Use promo code REDSHIRTS to get 10% off your order. And then you can get some new shirts because we know you need to update your wardrobe.
Yeah, probably do.
Yeah, we know you do. So, you know, you should go athleteteaclub.com. Use promo code REDSHIRT. You get 10% off. We're already helping you save money. We know that, you know, you're working on a budget over there, especially since you need to repay your aunt and uncle for their water bill.
Right.
So you get 10% off, promo code REDSHIRT, and you're going to get some quality stuff. I expect you to subscribe today.
Maybe.
And for anybody else listening, you can join Gibble too and be like him and update your wardrobe.
Big facts.
All right. So we have a ton of listener questions and our news took us a lot longer than I thought. So we might cruise through a couple of these. What kind of question? Do you want to start with something fun or you want to start with something more serious, Aaron?
Yeah, just do however you want. I don't really care.
All right.
We'll get around to all of these, but.
Let's start with this fun one. Could Colt Brennan have been an NFL starter if given a fair chance from DCCYT football? We'll start with you, Aaron.
Probably not. I think Brennan was probably a decade before his time in terms of his play style translating to the NFL. Even then, he had a lot of injury issues, and it kind of prevented him from being a decent deep ball thrower. Even then, in 2012, he couldn't stick in the CFL either and got replaced by JT O'Sullivan, who was a backup journeyman for a decade in the NFL. So likely not. Maybe nowadays he might have been a backup, but I don't think he would have ever really been a starter. He was your typical in that time period. I mean, the same guys as B.J. Simons and Cliff Kingsbury and these air raid guys that just didn't translate to the NFL style back in that time.
Yeah, I agree. He actually went a little AWOL on Instagram the other day, so I think he might have gotten hit in the head a couple times. I agree. He lacked some stuff, and it was a very, I don't want to say clit, like a cliche or niche, but it was like very system quarterback, if that's what you want to say. I don't think he was necessarily had the skill set for an NFL quarterback, even if it was today, even if it was guys that, you know, slinging it around all the time. He wasn't going to be able to throw the ball as deep as a guy like, you know, Mahomes and whatnot. Let's go to Aaron Prius. First, he says we have to deal with the raging elephants next in Jumanji. So that's your answer for that, Gibble.
Yeah.
And then he says, do you think a 2-loss SEC champ could miss the playoffs? We'll go with you first, Gibble.
Well, I think they could, but I think it would take a lot of undefeated teams or say the 2-loss team is Florida giving Alabama their only loss of the season or something like that. If that happens, then yes, I feel like they would give the Alabama the nod there, assuming in the scenario like Clemson, Ohio State, and let's say Oklahoma are all three undefeated, win their conference. I think if you're coming down to those two teams, or even a Pac-12 champ that's undefeated versus a 2-loss SEC champ, yeah, then I think, or even a 1-loss Pac-12 maybe could get in over a 2-loss SEC champ. I think in that scenario, not that crazy to think that they would miss.
Aaron?
No. I mean, when in college football, it's not crazy to think anything's possible, really. And like Gibble said, if the scenario is right, a 2-loss SEC champion could miss the playoffs. I think that would also depend on, is there a 1-loss SEC team? Because that team would likely jump the champion, because we've seen that conference championships don't matter that much. So 1-loss SEC team could make the playoffs over the 2-loss SEC champ. And also, you know, like Gibble said, if there's a 1-loss Pac-12 champion or Big 12 champion or something like that, and there's 4 1-loss teams, there's a possibility they get in. It's really, when it comes down to these guys that's in that office, it's the flavor of the week. When they go to deciding it, we've seen it in the past couple of years. So I don't think it's all that crazy.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it's that crazy for the idea of a 2-loss SEC team, but I still think with quote unquote SEC bias, a 2-loss team, if they have some quality wins in there, there's a really good chance that they still make it in, because the Pac-12 is a mess. Who knows what's going to come out of there? And if Clemson stumbles at all, that could hurt their chances of making it. He has another question here. We'll start with Aaron this time. Who is a dark horse Heisman candidate for each of
us? Brock Purdy.
Okay. Wow, that was hard. All right. You don't need to expand on that one too much more. Go ahead, Gibble.
Well, I'll say two. I'm going based off of the Heisman odds from FanDuel here. Sam
Howell. If they're one of the top five, you can't be picking them.
Nope. 13. Sam Howell. Yeah, I mean, if he produces anything like he did last year, which I would assume that he's going to do better than last year, I would say he would definitely be in the conversation for it. And the other one is Chuba Hubbard, who's at 18.
How is that a dark horse?
He's 18 on this list.
He ran for 2,000 yards last year.
According to this list, that's what I'm going off of. And
he's labeled a top 3 running back in the country.
That's what I'm okay.
Not like only all of that, but didn't he finish like fifth or sixth in the Heisman voting last year?
He's at 18 right now.
That's not a dark horse.
Where are you? Tell me what are you looking at?
I told you, FanDuel odds.
Give me that money all day long. That's not a dark horse.
Yeah. Well, I told you, I went just based off
of the second one is null and void. I'll give you Sam Howell. I'm not giving you Chuba Hubbard.
Okay, fair.
Like a dark horse, yeah. I mean, how the...
That's like me saying I think Travis Etienne's a dark horse. The dude just has had like 1,800-yard years in a row.
Travis Etienne is six.
Yeah.
And Chuba is...
Well, he's not top five, so dark horse.
I'll take Keaton Slovis. Because he had a really good year last year, I think, with a second year, under Graham Harrell and whatnot. I think that they'll be able to keep it moving. Graham Harrell's got a very quarterback-friendly offense. I think he's going to put up some big stats this year and sling it around. He still has some pretty good weapons out there, so I'll take Keaton Slovis.
Two other ones I have here. One, Tanner Morgan.
Good one.
Be a big one to keep an eye on. Also, whoever the hell is the starting running back for Wisconsin?
Yep. Yep. Doesn't matter who you are.
Insert their name. Now they'll look into that. But yeah, whoever's the starting running back for Wisconsin is always a name to keep an eye out for.
All right. Myers asked like three questions, so I think we need to get to one of those. Reggie Bush on his mind. Where does his Heisman campaign rank relative to others? Will we see his Heisman restored? Go ahead, Aaron.
Will they restore it? Probably not. They should, but probably not. Considering
they're always a bunch of communists.
Also considering the fact that they tried to give it to Vince Young after they took it away from him. but I mean, I'd say it's top 5-6 campaigns of all time. He averaged 8.7 yards per carry and 16 touchdowns on the ground in that season. It's probably the best season by a running back behind only Barry Sanders in 88, if I really sat down and thought about it. He beat Vince Young in that 2005 season Vince Young had, which was incredible as well. But he won the Heisman by 700 first-place votes and almost 1,000 total points. Which is fifth most first place votes behind Burrow, OJ, Troy Smith, and Marcus Mariota. Tied with Mariota for second in post 2000 total ballots, for second all time behind Burrow, or second in that time frame. It's one of the best Heisman campaigns of all time. And to beat a guy like Vince Young that same year, we all know how great Vince Young was that season, by that much. Kind of means a lot, because no offense to Burrow this past year obviously had a great season, but nobody was near his ballpark. You can make the case that Reggie and Vince Young were pretty similar, but voters definitely didn't lean anywhere near Vince Young in the same way they leaned towards Reggie, and so on and so forth. I don't even remember who finished behind Troy Smith in his season, but that one feels like the same similar situation he had with Burrow, where there wasn't somebody quite in the ballpark. But I'd say top 5 or 6 all time Heisman campaigns.
I'll let you answer, Skibble, but you weren't really watching college football at that time.
No, I really wasn't. I mean, just going based off of stats that I'm reading on the internet, I feel like he'd be top 5 in
running stats back on campaign. The internet. Yeah, the internet never lies.
I know. That's the thing. I feel like he'd be top 5 in comparison to the other running backs. So, like, you've got Tony Dorsett, Ron Dayne, Herschel Walker. I've had somebody else, but he's gone now. Anyway, like, I feel wonderful. Like he'd be top
five. Derrick Henry?
Yes. There we go. There's
since
the one.
Since you put him on your damn team, somehow
I won. I did. I don't understand. I feel like even Ricky Williams would be up there in that conversation. But I'd put him, like, top 5 in running backs for sure.
I mean, the man almost averaged an entire first down every time he touched the ball out of the backfield.
True.
Which is insane.
But I agree. They will not restore his Heisman, even though we all say we should. Even if we all sign a petition and get as many as, for Flavortown, they still won't restore his Heisman.
Also, I'd like to take this opportunity when I was doing some research. The Heisman website needs to update their graphics with Joe Burrow's information because I'm looking at like percentages and stuff like that. They don't have him listed in any of those. So I had to like redo all my writing I had down because at the end I was like, oh, Burrow. I was like, why is he not on any of these? So yeah, Heisman people, I don't know what you've been doing in COVID, but in quarantine, but like get around to updating your shit.
You would think it. And then if you go to their website, the first five pictures you see on their website are Joe Burrow. So,
yeah. Yep.
Apparently, they can't have anything else, but they can just put a bunch of pictures of him up there.
Nope.
So, Football Glory 20 has a dare for Gibble, a burpee for each positive case in the USA in the state intern Gibble was born in. How do you feel about that?
Not thrilled.
I think you have to do it.
I mean, I feel like I do have to do it, but I'm very unhappy about it.
PA COVID. Let's see. I think it's 621. I looked earlier, but I'm going to confirm less. That.
Anything less. A lot less.
Well, it doesn't say you have to do them all today.
No, you can do it over the course of a couple of weeks.
You can do five of them every day for however many days that takes.
That still sounds awful, but yeah, 621.
621. Oh, goodness. If I did five a day.
You'll be doing it for a year.
Yeah.
So we'll do another Myers question because, you know, he decided to ask a bunch this week. The three of you must line up at quarterback, running back, and wide receiver. Who is playing which position and what offense are you running? And then he also asks, how unnecessary is Blue Moon producing a light beer? He's going to try it, but why mess with a good thing?
All right. The first one. Well, so yeah, I'd say I'd probably be running back.
I'm nominating myself as wide receiver just because I'm the tallest.
You're the tallest and the skinniest. So yeah, that probably works out best. And Gibble would be the quarterback. We'd run a very Big Ten style offense.
We're running that Wisconsin bullshit.
Yeah, ground and pound and only crossing routes where I'm throwing the ball 5 yards across the middle. Where
do you want to get drilled by a Big Ten linebacker?
Yes, it's you.
Well, speed it up and be a Ted Ginn where you just get out of bounds real fast.
There you go.
Ooh, I like that idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's how we'd have to end up doing it.
Or your quarterback, we make intern Gibble be running back, and then he's just a decoy the entire time, and he never touches the ball. And then we go full-on Air Force air raid.
We literally have two ways of doing this, and that's either way, Gibble doesn't touch the ball enough. So, yeah, we either run an air raid where Gibble's the running back, or we run a Wisconsin-style offense where Gibble's the quarterback. So,
He's a good old Jim Sorgi.
Yeah. Yep. The fewest times you could possibly throw the ball, the better.
He's not going to lose you the game, but he's also not going to be in there when you need him to win it.
And we're absolutely not running a triple option because I do not trust him to make the right reads.
There's way too many decisions there. He can't even decide what he's going to have for lunch half the time, let alone which pitch he's going to make.
I'm no JT Barrett. I can't do the read option.
So is Blue Moon light beer unnecessary?
No, it's actually very delicious. Probably one of the better light beers out on the market, to be honest with you. So Myers, give it a try. It's pretty good. It's a little expensive. But compared to, I guess, normal Blue Moon, I think it's a little bit pricier, if I remember correctly. But no, it's very good. I highly recommend it.
So we have a Washington State question and a Mike Leach question, which is weird because I'm still used to Mike Leach being Washington State. So what is the realistic expectations for Nick Rolovich and the run and shoot offense this year at Washington State? Ryan Poffenroth. I would have liked to hear Gibble pronounce that name.
Poffenroth. That's a fun name.
I'll let you go first, Aaron.
I actually want to give it to Gibble. I want to see what he has to say about it. Like, I want his in-depth analysis on this
before I go.
Oh, yeah, you're looking for in-depth here. That's bold. I mean, realistic expectation is, I feel like, a winning season. I'm not sure how much talent they bring back. Their schedule looks relatively easy.
Enough of that.
That was very painful. I don't have an in-depth one for this.
I think you can expect a better workload for Max Borgi, which is nice. He's a pretty fun running back to watch, but you only ever really saw him work out of the backfield passing situations last year. So I think that'll help the offense. Realistic expectations have to be maybe they go to a bowl game. The schedule is not easy. They could probably start 3-0. They have Utah State, Houston, and Idaho, and Houston travels to Pullman. So they could probably start 3-0. But after you get to that, the three bottom-tier Pac-12 teams that they have on their schedule are all road games, Oregon State, Colorado, and UCLA. So that does not help them. And also, I think they go on the road to Stanford. Luckily, they get the harder teams in Pullman, but you know, some of these games I are hard to call a win if they have to travel on the road to teams that are pretty similar in talent-wise. I do think with the run-and-shoot offense, you're still going to see a fun offense up there. That's not super far off from Leach, but you are going to see more running involved, which is a nice thing when you have good running backs. So best bet, you're probably looking at 6-6. I'd be surprised if they did better than that, but it's going to be a little bit on the fringes. Maybe. Hopefully, they have a better defense, but
I see three games they should win, three games they should lose, and six games that could, in theory, go either way, anywhere from 40 to 60% chance of winning, I guess you could say. The first three games they should win, Utah State, Houston, Idaho. They should whoop Idaho pretty bad. And then Oregon State, Cal, Utah, Stanford, Colorado, and UCLA are your six games that you need to steal half of them, because I don't think they can beat Arizona State. I don't think they'll beat Oregon. I don't think they'll beat Washington. So those other six games, you got to steal three in there. And like you said, four of them are on the road. You have Cal and Utah at home. Nobody really knows what Utah is going to look like. Cal had a pretty good defense last year. They need to get their offense kind of rolling again. Oregon State's on the up. Colorado, new coach, should win on the road in Colorado. Could be tough. UCLA started to make trends last night. Also, everybody hates Chip Kelly, so they might suck. And Stanford, you just never know what you're going to get out of them. So I think they can win three of those games, but you know, it's a crapshoot in the Pac-12. Let's see. And on to Mike Leach. Is happy MSU fan. What is Mike Leach going to do for the program? I don't know. We'll just go. What's your 3 to 5 year outlook for Mississippi State with Mike Leach?
Same as every time Mike Leach just stopped at a place. I think you're probably looking at between 7 and 9 wins a season tops. Maybe you can get to 10 wins on some years. Probably wear out his welcome and leave within 5 to 10 years after getting there. The big thing is going to be defensive improvements, because the SEC offenses are no longer this ground and pound style as much. You know, Alabama's transitioning to more quarterback friendly offenses with talented quarterbacks like Tua and now Bryce Young and whatever Mac Jones ends up being. He has to have defensive improvements here. He didn't have that at Tech and or Wazoo. And that's going to be huge in order to win those games. Cause if not, I mean, you're looking at probably 6 or 7 wins a season, because the air raid's nice, but against those defenses that he hasn't had to play as a coach his whole career, it's going to be a lot tougher, especially if you aren't stopping the opponents when they get the ball. I do think it's going to be fun to see the air raid in the SEC, and Mississippi State's going to garner much more attention. And hopefully, best case scenario, also they start to garner a lot of top flight offensive recruits from down south moving forward, which he hasn't really been able to do at Washington State, unfortunately. Was able to get some guys in at Texas Tech when he was in Texas, but we'll kind of see. But those, I think, are where you're looking at for Mississippi State. But at least your team's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I don't think he'll be as good as Dan Mullen. I think he's going to be a step below Dan Mullen. So I think if you could average 8 to 9 years, win your Egg Bowl, you know, get a good year where, you know, Alabama's in a down year, or, you know, LSU, Auburn, A&M are in a down year. You're in the worst half of the SEC where you have to try to figure out a way to win one of the four games between Auburn, Alabama, LSU, and A&M every year, and then hope your crossover games are friendly. And then hope that Arkansas doesn't get going, and hope that Ole Miss doesn't get going with Lane Kiffin, or else you're in a bad position overall. So if you can average 8 wins a year and then get up to 10 every 3 or 4 years, you're in a good position. But yeah, he'll most likely wear out his welcome. Gibble, do you have any thoughts on this, or any thoughts at all? Any opinions on anything?
I think he'll be good for the program, but like you guys said, he needs to be getting that program to be an average, at least 8 win team per season. Otherwise he is going to wear out his welcome, which is really tough to do in the West.
So we have a couple questions left. I'm trying to move these along because we took some fair amount of time with news, but let's say season kicks off as scheduled. Which playoff contender would be hurt the most if multiple starters are out because of positive COVID tests? This is from Jake Thigpen. I guess to start, I mean, I would say in general, because obviously if you lose your quarterback, it's going to hurt more than anything. Rather, if you lose your quarterback, that's really one, compared to if you lose 9 and 2 are linebackers, 1's a defensive end, and 2 are offensive linemen. So let's just say you lose 3 on offense, 3 on defense, and they're all starters, non-quarterbacks.
So my first thought is the SEC teams, Bama, Auburn, LSU, strictly because of the schedule and how grueling it can get mid-season there. And if you're down a couple key players, that's going to be kind of big, and that could lead to losses that end up knocking you down quite a bit. I think Clemson at this point is probably in the clear by season's open, depending on how the rest of that program goes. But also the talent discrepancy between them and the rest of the teams in the their ACC division is probably wide enough that if they lose a couple of starters, they'd probably be okay. The big one, I think, to me, though, when looking at it, is probably Oregon. And I think it's because they're probably the favorite in the Pac-12 going into this season. I think they're still ranked in the top 10. They still have a very well-rounded team, even with Herbert leaving. And with quarterback questions, if they lose a Penei Sewell or any of their plenty of star defensive talent going into the season, I think could hurt them big in a conference that's not wide open for the taking. I still think Oregon's probably the favorite for it and probably the best team out there. But there's a lot of teams that are kind of creeping up: Arizona State, UCL, or USC, and Washington, and those schools that could interrupt that, and Oregon could end up taking an L or two should they lose some big time guys like Sewell or Holland or any of the cornerbacks, Thibodeau, you know, a lot of those guys. So I think Oregon might actually be one of the biggest ones.
Gibble?
Just to be different, I'm going to say Oklahoma would be one that would suffer, especially if they lose Spencer Rattler early.
I said no quarterbacks.
Well,
it's like he just doesn't listen.
Don't listen sometimes. So still, I mean,
they are thin at wide receivers. So if they lose wide receivers at all, it's going to hurt.
Yeah, I mean, that I think they're in a spot this year where they're not essentially they've been essentially a lock to win the Big 12 for the past few years. I think there's a few more people kind of getting at their heels this year with, you know, Iowa State and Oklahoma State both kind of gaining some momentum. If either of those teams have them early, I'm not sure what Oklahoma's schedule looks like, but if Oklahoma loses a lot of talent, drops a game or two, then they're going to be really fighting for that Big 12 spot and more than likely fall out of the playoff picture.
I'm going to go with 2 Big 10 teams. I don't know. Michigan, I don't think necessarily is considered a playoff contender this year, but they should be in the upper half of the Big 10. If they would lose any key players right in the middle of their schedule, they have a 4-game stretch that could be pretty brutal with Wisconsin, Penn State, Michigan State, and Minnesota. So if they lose any key players in there, Michigan State's not supposed to be good, but it's still a rivalry game. Wisconsin, Penn State, and Minnesota are all going to be pretty good this year. So losing them, losing players on both sides of the ball, losing a couple guys could be devastating, especially if they have a new quarterback in there. You know, They lost a couple of key guys on defense, depending on the replacements behind them. And then on the flip side of that is Penn State. They have a brutal schedule right in the middle of there too, because they go Michigan, Iowa, Ohio State, Indiana, and Indiana could potentially be 6-1 or 7-0 going into that game, where if you lose guys on offense, I know they have Journey Brown, but if you lose a Journey Brown and you lose a Pat Freiermuth, you know, to COVID, like, your offense is going to take a massive hit there. On defense, if you lose a Micah Parsons, or if you lose any of the guys on that line, Jason Owe or Tariq Castro Fields, like, you're gonna see something happen there, because Penn State got tortured in the air last year by Minnesota. If any of these guys can figure out a quarterback situation other than Ohio State, they could see somebody throw the ball on them a lot as well. Let's see. What's the next one we got here? We'll do Myers, and we'll save the very confusing question for the end. While certainly not a focal point, I'm skeptical that we'll see marching bands featured at games. What in percentage terms does this take away from the overall product? 1, 5, 10%? How does this compare to limited no fans? Does taking away the marching bands affect the game that much, or affect the experience that much?
I will be honest here, and this may ruffle some feathers. The marching band to me is just background noise. I think when I'm watching a game, I'm more in tune with the crowd noise than I am the marching bands. To be quite frank with you, outside of Hail to the Victors, I don't think I could pinpoint a song for any school if you put a gun to my head. So, to me, I don't think it affects me all that much. And more so the fans not being there would affect it a lot more for me. So I think there's probably a little different for other people. But
I have a friend who was in the Ohio State marching band. We actually discussed this on Friday, coincidentally. And we think that if it's limited spectators, that there most likely won't be a ban, because if they believe COVID is spread through droplets or coughing or, you know, essentially saliva, that most of the band is played with, you know, horns, where you are blowing into the instrument, meaning you could potentially spread it. So we think that they might look to eliminate that. And if you're already doing limited fans, it's not going to be that big of a difference for this year.
See, I think in a normal year, just saying a percentage, I'd say like kind of like a 5% effect of kind of taken away from the overall product. When you're there, the band is, depending which school you're at, the band is kind of there to hype people up and to kind of dictate what the crowd's doing sometimes. Yeah, the Jumbotrons will say get loud and make noise at different times, but the band is kind of an important part of that. This year, I'd say the band could be even more important if they're allowed to be there. But like you just said, Jake, that doesn't seem like a smart thing, considering saliva is the way to spread COVID. But I'd say they'd be even more influential in a game this year with limited spectators if they are allowed to be in the stadium.
I think the stadiums would just be so quiet that,
yeah,
you would, that's, hear the band, but the band normally has to stop at a certain point before the play. They're not supposed to keep going as the play gets started. So normally I would say it would have an effect, but if there's only 10,000 people in the stands, you would hear the band more than any of the people. And I don't think it would really affect away teams too often. All right, we've got this last one. Total chaos scenario. 2020 is played in front of empty stadiums, which yields a lot of upsets. All conference champions except the ACC have two losses. Who goes to the college football playoff? I asked him to clarify, or else we're going to assume who wins the conference championships. And then he went real crazy on me and said, Florida, Texas, Iowa, and Utah are all 11-2 in conference champs. Clemson's 13-0. The other 10-2 teams include Alabama, Georgia, Auburn, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, USC, Ohio State, and Oregon. Sort out the mess. How much is eye test and strength of schedule metric? Which strength of schedule metric are you using? I don't even know who makes it here.
So my first question is, was this asked by a Clemson fan? because I see that they are 13-0 and everybody else has two losses.
Let me look this up, actually.
But the answer to the question, after taking a quick gander, is the college football playoff here is Clemson, 1 seed, Florida, 2 seed, Texas, 3 seed, Ohio State, 4 seed. My reasoning behind this is the committee's not going to give a shit about Iowa and Utah if they have the same amount of losses, no matter how many conference titles they have, over Bama, Georgia, Auburn, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, US, the names, the big names of college football. They're not going to give a shit. They've already said the conference championships don't matter that much. So eliminate them, but Florida and Texas are big name programs. So they'll make it in off the conference championship thing because, you know, we pick and choose when that matters. So there's your first three. And then looking at the rest of them, the ACC's accounted for, the SEC's accounted for, and the Big 12's accounted for. Ohio State, that's your next big name. You could argue Bama, maybe Georgia, but I think you take the Big 10 team here in Ohio State to be the 4th seed. You could make a case for USC, but Ohio State's been much better than USC, obviously, for years now. So I think you'd go with them for the national exposure over USC here. You already have Texas, so Oklahoma's not in. You have Florida, so I'm not. Bama probably finishes 5th. Georgia 6th. Iowa wins at 11-2. They're probably ranked 20th in the college football playoff thing for whatever reason. Utah, not even ranked. They're probably like 27th. So, yeah, that I think that's where we're at. Notre Dame probably finishes like 6th, you know, whatever. So, I mean, that'd be my guess on these schools.
I looked it up. I think he's a Colorado fan.
What's okay? Hey, props to Colorado. My last name is their field, so shout out Buffs.
Well, who are you taking in those 14 playoff?
Oh, goodness.
Obviously, Clemson's in, so you have to figure out the other three.
Clemson's in. The conference champion, Florida, would probably have had to beat Bama to get there in this, or Auburn in this
or
scenario.
LSU or A&M, but they probably would have beat Georgia.
No, I'd think for the conference champion, you're going to have a 2-loss team in there. So I think it'd either be Bama or Auburn out of these teams that they would have beat in.
Well, I'm saying they probably would have beat Georgia, or you. Well, they would have played Georgia at least. Who knows? Oh, anyway, well, Georgia's got 2 losses too. Who knows?
Yeah, so in the conference championship game, they would have beat Auburn or Bama. So that takes both of them out because Florida beat them both. Texas would have more than likely beat Oklahoma. Texas gets in. Iowa would have beat Ohio State. But like Aaron said, the brand makes it seem like you should probably take Ohio State. And depending on who Iowa lost to, you have no idea. I don't know what Iowa's schedule looks like. And yeah, this is pretty much a crapshoot. But I mean, I'd probably end up in the same spot as Aaron. Florida, Texas, Clemson, Ohio State. Just because they are the biggest brands. You would assume that I think that the eye test is going to be the most important metric used because you're just seeing these teams playing each other. You have no other factors going into it. There's no crowd noise. There's no real distractions like that. So I think half of the strength of schedule tends to be the stadiums and the atmosphere you're going into. Without that, you're just playing head to head. You're seeing which team is better. And I think the eye test is going to ultimately be the greatest metric that they would use to decide which teams get in.
It's funny because eye test is not a metric, but no. I will take Clemson, Florida, Texas, and Alabama because it's almost illegal to leave Alabama out of the playoff. Don't know how they managed to get left out last year, only because Tua got injured. That's my speculation. But Alabama will have, I can't even say they would have beaten USC because they might not have beaten USC. We don't know actually what it is.
The other thing is, like, you can't really guess on this without looking up 15 schools' schedules and then trying to piece together who they win and lose to. So
the one thing I can be sure of, Notre Dame's out. Notre Dame is not making it in this situation. They have no shot because of two losses. One of them is guaranteed to Clemson because Clemson's undefeated. They play USC. Who knows who won that game? I'm just going to take Bama because it means that they beat some combination of USC, Georgia, A&M, LSU, Auburn. They beat some combination in that, and they might have even lost to like a Tennessee. So I think they have enough quality wins in there, meaning according to this, technically Bama can't be 10-2 because they'd be 10-3 if they lost in the conference championship game. That's a technicality, but we can run with it still. But they would have enough wins, I think, in there, enough quality wins that would put them ahead of other people because of just the sheer amount of talent they would have played, amount of good teams. So I'll take Clemson as the one seed, Florida, Texas is 2-3, and Bama.
My answer was also partially a troll answer. So just to see Clemson run over Ohio State again in the playoffs.
Well, that's rude.
You can't see it, but I'm giving you the finger right now.
Well, you can't see it, but I'm holding up an image of Justin Fields with
I'm glad his I can't hands see on it. His helmet. I'm glad I can't see it. I'm very, very glad I cannot see that.
All right. Is that all the questions, I think?
Yeah, that was all the questions.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for submitting those. We'll be back in 2 weeks. First preview episode, when then we'll be back on a weekly schedule. Previewing college football. We're almost there. We're very close. And we'll be previewing the ACC, the American Athletic Conference, and also Notre Dame and the Independents. Really make sure to follow us. Yeah, I mean, might maybe touch on Army, but
BYU. You know, I don't,
oh yeah, BYU as well.
UMass.
Shut up, Gibble.
Make sure to follow us on social media at Walk On Redshirts on Twitter and The Walk On Redshirts on Instagram. Also, don't forget to check out our YouTube page and see some of the past half hour huddles that Jake had done. That is under Walk On Redshirts podcast over there on YouTube. And again, we'll be back in 2 weeks and we're starting to get into the college football season. So thanks again for all of your questions. We'll see you guys then. Thanks.